I'm Alistair Campbell from The Rest is Politics.
Nish Kumar here from Podsave the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Podsave the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September.
Your kids could get free or low-cost health coverage from Medicaid or CHIP. Even if you've applied before, they may be eligible now. Kids up to age 19 are covered for checkups, vaccines, dentist visits, hospital care, and more. And if they already have Medicaid or CHIP, remember to renew every year. Visit InsureKidsNow.gov or call 877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
I'm Alistair Campbell from The Rest is Politics.
Nish Kumar here from Podsave the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Podsave the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September.
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You're listening to continuing coverage of the trial of Adam Montgomery for the murder of his daughter Harmony Montgomery from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Courtroom coverage continues now.
Excuse me, sir. Apologize, Sergeant. Just trying to make sure that this is working properly. With regards to those initials, what are your three initials?
B-E-O.
And did you collect evidence in this particular case from this vehicle, from this 2010 Chrysler Sebring?
Yes, I did.
Okay. So safe to say then it's going from B-E-O 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 and on up.
That's correct. Okay.
At some point in looking at this particular vehicle, did you also test it with a substance known as Blue Star?
Yes, I did.
Could you go ahead and why don't you go ahead and tell us what Blue Star is and what it can do, what your training has been with it as well?
Blue Star is a chemical that detects the hemoglobin in blood. So we would generally spray it out of a spray mist container and we would get a reaction to the hemoglobin in blood. The reaction that we get, I would identify it as the color of the tissue boxes in the front there, the top part. It comes up as a fluorescent blue.
And you're referring to these tissue boxes on the very top of the jury panel?
That's correct, yes.
The top blue or the lower blue?
The top blue.
Okay. And how would you describe that blue? What words would you use?
Like chemiluminescent.
Chemiluminescent?
Yes.
Okay. Bright blue?
Bright blue, yes.
Okay. Excuse me. How do you apply Blue Star to something, whether it's an object or a large area?
The process, it comes in, there's a plastic container, spray bottle, and then a small little foil packet that has three tablets in it. We open up the three tablets, put it in the plastic container, and then we agitate it. We just swirl it around, not to shake it vigorously. And once the tablets have dissolved, we adjust the spray nozzle on the nozzle so that it's a fine mist, not a stream. And then once we have the fine mist, then we start spraying whatever we suspect to be an area where blood could have been or is.
When you say that you spray it on, can you kind of describe how you would spray it on? Is it just, you know, me at my house, you know, spraying some Windex on a glass, or how do you spray it? What's the method you use?
Using the Windex example, it's not like you're using Windex where you're spraying it directly on the window. The method is you want to be about 2 feet away from the object and spray it slightly above it so it kind of falls down onto the object, not spraying it straight at it. It's more of a mist in the air so that it falls down on the object.
When you go to use Blue Star, and I take it, how many times have you done that yourself?
In my detective career, probably 15 to 20 times.
Okay. When you go to do that, is there a certain process that you follow each time when you say, okay, I have to go use Blue Star, I'm going to go get reagents? What are the first steps that you do before you get to that step of mixing and agitating?
The first steps, I look at the item or the area that I'm going to process to kind of develop a game plan to figure out how we're going to do this. And once I've determined that whatever the area is, it's going to be processed, I'll go mix the Blue Star, as I mentioned before. While that's agitating, I'll get a camera ready. For the camera, we have special functions that we have to set up on the camera. In my time in detectives, I had one camera that was set up, so I would just have to press a button so it would automatically go to that function. I would double check to make sure that it was on that correct function, that nobody had altered the program before. And I actually should say, before using the Blue Star, I'd read the directions just to make sure that nothing had changed from the last time that I'd used it. And all my times in doing it, it stayed consistent with how to use it. I got my camera ready. I also get a tripod because the camera has to go on a tripod, because when you are taking a photo, once you have that reaction, you need to have a 30-second or more exposure. So that's what the tripod's for, so it can hold the camera still for the 30 seconds or longer as it takes the picture.
All right. I'd like to ask you about a couple of those different components that you just explained to us. I think you said that you read the directions every time. Why do you do that?
Just to make sure that I'm doing it properly.
Okay. And also with regards to the camera and the camera settings, why is that so important?
The directions say that it has to be at a certain set up a certain way so that the lens is open wider when it's taking the photo. Because we're also, and I apologize if I didn't mention this earlier, we do this in total darkness or with a little bit of light. So that's why we have the long exposure. I would have a flashlight on my person, so when the lights were shut off, we could use the flashlight to, one, help assist us in getting around whatever object we were doing, making sure the camera was set up properly, and then adding just a little bit of light to the area. It's my understanding that the camera will take in whatever little bit of light there is and be able to take an appropriate photo with the reaction.
So when it comes to lighting, do you actually use other officers to help you, have somebody on the light switch?
Yes, I do.
Okay. And you said also that you set up a tripod. Why do you do that?
Because the exposure, once you click the button to take the photo, it's going to be 30 seconds. So if it's on a tripod, the camera's not moving. I'm not able to hold a camera for 30 seconds without any type of vibration or anything like that. So that's why we keep it on the tripod that takes the photo of the reaction that we see it. Once we see the reaction, the tripod and camera is kept in the same location. The settings are readjusted to a normal photo, and then we take a second photo to show that same area if there was a reaction, what it looks like.
So you're taking a photograph if there is a reaction, and then separately the lights come back on. I just want to make sure I got this right. And you're taking a photograph of the same spot with the lights on, so we can see what that looks like in regular light. When
That's
you
right.
spray on the Blue Star, then does it physically change the color of the object? So, for example, if I sprayed it on this piece of paper, is this piece of paper going to turn blue?
No.
Okay. And so you take that second photograph. Why? Why is that important?
We take the second photograph if we see a reaction the first time. That way you can see the photo that has the reaction, the fluorescent blue, where the reaction is on the object, and then you can see it again in normal daylight with the lights on.
When you are spraying these items on, spraying this material on, how big an area do you do at a time?
It depends on what the object is.
Can I ask a clarifying question on that then? So if it depends on what an object is, so for example, I wanted to photograph something the size of these tissue boxes that are here, and I just want to spray that and photograph that. When I do that, am I going to want to have my camera up close or far away? And how many times am I going to take a photo of that, do you think?
So the general rule with photography and with scenes is we'd start off with the wide one to show this kind of angle, and then we get to a mid-range photo, and then we wouldn't do a close-up photo. The close-up photo would just be right of that object. If we're using the example of the shoebox, I would probably stand back with the camera probably 3 feet and still spraying at 2 feet, slightly above it, so the mist would come down. But I'd also want to try to work on getting the top of the table part there, as well as the sides.
Separate from that, then, let's say I had something that was the size of this table here to my right.
Which, as you can see, is certainly longer than I am tall.
If I wanted to go ahead and blue star an item that large, what would be the process to do that?
Same process as far as taking the photos. Something that size, I would probably break it up into maybe a half or even quarters. And with each section that would get broken up, I would take a photo just of that area, just where I'm processing. I wouldn't do the big area for this small piece. It would be a photo of this small piece for that small piece.
When you use Blue Star, can you get false positives sometimes?
Yes, you can.
What are false positives?
False positives are you would see the same reaction, the same fluorescent blue color. However, it doesn't last as long as what I've seen to be a positive reaction. The positive reaction is from 30 seconds upwards to a minute. The false positives that I have seen, it turns the bright blue quickly, and then it quickly fades.
Do you know what it is that can cause these false positives?
It can be different cleaning solutions, bleach, some chlorine-based materials, also some type of metals. I know iron was one specifically that it mentioned.
Do you know if any foods can cause these sort of false positives?
I don't know of any foods. I don't know.
You said in your experience, so have you seen some of these false positives before?
Yes, I have.
Okay. And if you get a positive, what you think may not be a false positive, would you go ahead and then swab that item?
Yes, I would.
How do you do that?
The swabs, it's like a Q-tip. Except it's about 5 inches long. The ones we use, wooden handle, and it's got the cotton swab at one end. They come two to a package that's sealed. We'd open the package. We take one swab out at a time. We would use sterile water. If the sample that we were trying to collect was a dry sample, if it was something that was wet or moist, we could just use the swab. So if it's a dry sample, we would take some sterile water, pour some sterile water into the cap of the sterile water container, and we would dip the swab in the cap, and then we would take a swab of whatever we wanted to take a swab of. Generally, we would try to use the tip of the swab and just like a little swirling motion. You don't have to get the entire swab soaked in whatever the item is, but usually you want to get a good amount.
When you say the tip of the, I'm sorry, you would dip, put the water in the cap of the sterile water solution. Am I envisioning correctly? We're talking about a cap and you would turn it upside down, so the inside is what you would be pouring the water into?
That's correct. It's probably about a half inch to three quarters of an inch cap.
Okay. And once you go ahead and take a swab of something that came back with what you believed may be positive for Blue Star, where does that swab go?
We then put that in a cardboard box. Cardboard boxes come flat. They're probably 6 inches or so, and about quarter of an inch or so in a square. So we assemble that box together. We put the swab in it, and we close the swab box. And then to seal the box, we would put evidence tape on both ends of the swab box, label it appropriately with whatever evidence numbers we were using. Generally, put a biohazard sticker on that swab, and then we fill out information as far as the case number with the evidence number.
And where do those swabs get shipped to?
The state lab.
Okay. Did you apply Blue Star to this 2010 Chrysler Sebring with the New Hampshire registration 436-8206 that we talked about earlier?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Where did you apply it?
I did the interior and exterior of the vehicle.
Okay. I'd like to start with the exterior and kind of work our way in. When you say the exterior of the vehicle, what parts of the exterior?
The entire vehicle. The hood, the roof, passenger side doors, windows. There were no doors on the driver's side of the vehicle, and I did the trunk everywhere.
Sergeant, you've got a series of photographs in front of you that are photographs that specifically are numbered 4 through 10, as well as State's Exhibits 103, 4, 5, and 6. I'd like you to go ahead and look through those for a brief moment. Some will be down there and some will be up there.
This one as well?
Yes, if you would, please. That's 104.
Okay.
So I'd ask you to go ahead and look through 103, 4, 5, and 6 are the smaller, standard paper ones. 104 through 10 are the larger.
All set, Sergeant?
Yes, sir.
All right, thank you. Specifically, I'd like to go ahead and start, and you can feel free to either look at the photographs that are in front of you, or you can also look at the screen as I project them behind you. Either one's going to be fine. I'd like to go ahead and start with State's Exhibit 103. I don't know why.
Could you please look at State's Exhibit 103? It's one of the smaller ones.
Yes.
Do you recognize that exhibit?
Yes, I do.
I wonder if I could just approach the witness for a second. Excuse me. When in doubt, unplug it and plug it back in. Do you recognize that exhibit?
Yes, I do.
What do you recognize it to be?
That's the Chrysler Sebring that I assisted in searching.
Okay. And is that the trunk of the vehicle?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Let me ask you, were you aware whether or not this car came from a tow lot before you saw it?
Yes, I was.
Okay. And I'd like to also move on to State's Exhibit 5, if I could, please. One of the larger exhibits, or you can look on the screen behind you. Do you recognize this photograph?
Yes, I do.
Okay. How do you recognize the car?
It's missing the wheels on the front of the vehicle and the driver's side doors.
Okay. Now, you stated that the time that you applied Blue Star to, I believe you said, to all of the exterior. So does that include all of the hood that we can see here?
That's correct.
All right. Did you also apply it to the roof of the car?
Yes, I did.
Windshields?
Yes.
Okay. I see that we've got two doors missing here on the driver's side, but what about the passenger side doors and the exterior of those doors?
Yes, I did.
Okay. What about the trunk that we can see sticking up in the back of this photo? Did you apply it there?
Yes, I did.
From the Blue Star that was applied to the exterior of the car, did you receive any positive reactions?
No, I did not.
Excuse me. So, with regards to the condition of the car, I wonder if you could go ahead and talk to us a little bit about that. What did you feel the condition was when you saw it?
It's obvious that it had been in a junkyard for a couple years. It was missing what's seen in the picture here, the wheels, the doors, all the guts to the vehicle were inside of the vehicle. There was no engine. The rear tires are missing. Inside, there were a lot of rust flakes, dirt, dust, and it had like a moldy scent. Some areas were wet and still had some snow and ice in it.
You said it still had snow and ice in it?
That's correct.
With regards to the regards to the missing parts here, did you also notice whether or not the engine was missing?
Yes, it was.
Overall, what was the smell of the car?
There was the musty, damp, gross smell.
Okay. I'd like to go to Exhibit 4 for a moment, please. You recognize this photo?
Yes, I do.
Okay, what's that a photo of?
The same vehicle, the Chrysler Sebring.
The Sebring. Okay. When you applied the Blue Star, what appeared as possible positive tests in the trunk area of the car? Did you get any possible positives there?
Yeah, we saw a couple areas that had some possible positive reactions.
Okay. And was that on the second or was that on the first day
that
you looked
in
the car? Who was assisting you that first day in collecting those swabs?
Detective Joe Tucker.
And you said Joe Tucker?
That's correct.
Okay. And those four swabs, were they all from the trunk area on the interior or were there any on the exterior?
Interior.
Once those four swabs, did you photograph them and apply the Blue Star in the same manner that you described for us a moment ago?
Yes, I did.
And once you collected those swabs, where were they sent?
New Hampshire State Lab.
Did you also use any tools on swabs? The jury's heard this question before, something called a hemostick.
Yes.
All right, what is a hemostick?
Hemostick is a small strip of paper that has one end, a small portion of it has some sort of chemical on it that also reacts to the hemoglobin in blood.
Okay. And did you use any hemosticks here?
Yes, we did.
Okay. Did you use them on any of the spots where you had those that Blue Star positive results?
When we had the Blue Star positive results, I think I did.
I don't want you to necessarily guess. So
yeah, I can't.
Let me ask you, if you had a chance to look at your report, or did you write a report on the search of that car?
Yes, I did.
All right. And if you had a chance to look at that report, would that help refresh your recollection as to whether you used hemosticks on any of those four swabs from the trunk?
Yes, please.
Bait stamp pages 111 through 114. I'm just going to ask you, do you recognize that document generally?
Yes, I do.
What do you recognize that to be?
This is the report that I did that documented the search of the Chrysler Sebring.
If you had a chance to look at that report, do you think that might refresh your recollection on whether or not you used hemosticks on any of those four swabs that were taken from the trunk?
Yes.
If you could please go ahead and do that, take your time. And then, does that refresh your recollection?
Yes, it
what
does.
That is?
Thank you.
Let me take the report. Were there any of those that you used hemosticks on from those four in the trunk?
Yes.
Okay, how many?
Four.
Four?
Yes.
So you used four hemosticks on the four positive Blue Stars?
Yes.
Why would you use another testing method after you used the Blue Star?
We use it as kind of a backup. Just to kind of reconfirm, in the event, in my experience, we have had some that do come out testing for positive. So this way we can at least explain to the lab if we need to that it tested positive for Blue Star and then also on the hemostick.
Okay. And why is that important to do? You say you do that for the lab. Can you kind of explain to us why?
I think, they ask us. If what we've done for processing, just I guess my assumption is it's on their end, so they know how that they can process it further, so they know if it's been treated by other chemicals or what other chemicals have been used on it before.
And generally, when you do an application like this of some sort of a testing, do you tell the lab what you did so they know what may or may not be on there?
That's correct.
With regards to the hemosticks, can those also present a false positive sometimes?
Yes, they can.
Okay. Have you seen that in your experience?
I have, yes.
Right. And can you explain what the hemostics look like? I believe you said that they were little strips of paper. How small are we talking?
They are probably 2 inches, 2.5 inches in length, an eighth of an inch wide.
Very narrow then.
Very, very narrow, yes. Okay. And then one end, it's got a different material on it. I can't remember if it's a different color, but it's obvious that that is the end where you put whatever reaction or whatever you want to test against on that end.
Did you use some hemostics on other areas of the car, interior, other clothing that was found in the car, items that were found in the car in general?
Yes, I did.
And generally speaking, where did you send the ones that came back these presumptive positive from the hemostics? Where did you send those?
To the state lab.
Did you have any that you tested with hemostics that actually came back negative for Blue Star first?
That's correct, yes.
And did you collect swabs from there as well?
Yes.
And where did you send those?
We just kept those at the police department.
Okay. Later on, do you know if any of those were sent to the state lab?
I don't recall.
Did you also, I believe you said before that you had, no, you didn't. Were you ever involved in a search of 77 Guilford Street?
Yes, I was.
And what was your role in that search?
I was asked to Blue Star a little section of the basement area.
Okay. Of a section of the basement area?
That's correct.
Okay. And other than that, did you have any other role to play in the search of that Guilford Street address?
I had to go back another time for a secondary search using Blue Star in a different area of the basement. And then I also assisted in a search of the property at 77 Guilford Street.
With regards to the two Blue Star applications at 77 Guilford Street, you said one was in the basement. Where was the second one about?
In the basement as well.
And also in the basement. And did either of those produce any positive results?
No, they did not.
What about the search of 644 Union Street later on? Were you present during a search of that residence?
Yes, I was.
All right. And who was primarily doing the search of that residence?
Representatives from the FBI.
And what was your role that day during that search?
My role is just mostly being an observer. If they identified something that was going to be taken as evidence, they would physically collect it from where it was, pass it off to myself, and I would bring it down to another representative from the FBI who would complete the evidence log and collect that piece of evidence and do their own documentation.
Just a brief moment, please, Your Honor. Sergeant O'Leary, I just have three last quick questions for you. With regards to the search of the trunk, you stated that you applied Blue Star, if I was correct, and you took four swabs. Were those four swabs from areas that tested presumptively positive?
Yes.
Under the Blue Star? Okay. And did you see any other indications back there that you deemed to be false positives?
Yes.
Okay. And how many? Do you remember?
Three or four, only two or three in the trunk area.
Okay. Two or three in the trunk area.
Yes.
Okay. And with regards to the rest, the other areas of the car, did you find food wrappers in that car or food containers?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Just one or multiple?
I found multiple. They're like snack packs, some baby bottles, some baby food containers, and other miscellaneous wrappers for food.
In your search of the car, were there a large number of pieces of evidence that were taken out that were signed with your name, BE01, BE02, BE03, things
yes.
like that? Okay. And were those ones that all that you had seized and then again got logged in under your initials?
That's correct.
All right. At this time, Sergeant O'Leary, I don't have any further questions for you. I believe we may need to see the court for a brief moment, but then defense counsel will have a few.
Thank you.
Gentlemen, I think this is a good natural breaking point for you all to break for lunch. So I'm going to I'm going to release you for lunch. I remind you, don't discuss the case with each other or with anybody else. Make sure that you are keeping an open mind. Don't do any research. Don't look up any media. And we will see you after the lunch break. If you would return at 1 o'clock, please. All rise for the jurors. Sir, I am going to have you come back at 1 o'clock.
Thank you.
I'm sure you're tired, but I needed to give them a break. So.
Thank you.
All right. Everybody, 1 o'clock? Yes. You may step down. Okay, give me 1 minute. You may sit down. I reviewed the letter. I just want to review the draft order. Council, typically we would get this electronically, so I don't usually give a signed copy back that's not already filed. So I can do this one of a couple ways. I can just, if you take a minute, I'll get 3 signed copies and get them to each of you, or I can give it to you and you can take it downstairs and make copies and upload it. Might make sense. I'm fine either way.
I don't know that the state is a preference.
Okay, so just maybe just wait a minute and I'll get you signed copies of I'll get you copies of both the letter and the order for Attorney Sheehan and each of the parties. Okay, so just give me 1 minute.
Thank you.
Morning, okay. Tomorrow morning for the CDs?
Yes.
Okay.
Sorry, I was...
That's okay. I just wanted you to know, you know, maybe we'll stop a couple of minutes early if I can today so that staff can work on that at the close of the business day.
Thank you.
The microphone there, is that being used for your honor?
It's used for, yeah. Let's take this one back. And we'll just have the, oh, I see, because your voice, you just have to speak louder.
I can speak.
You can do it.
I should tell my spouse that you are. I will definitely speak louder, and I will be much more cognizant of if I need to move about the well to grab that microphone. So we can leave this one here permanently, and ideally leave that one back here.
Okay, perfect.
Now,
yes, please. Thank you. Shall we put the witness back on the stand?
Just have one brief moment. I just need to say. Just not trying to make sure we don't have anything slowing us down later on.
And Attorney Ugadi, if you want us at any point to lower the lights, or defense, if you want us to lower the lights because you're showing something on the screen, then just let us know, okay? All right, now we're going to put the witness back on the stand. And just be careful of the wires, please.
Yep, thank you.
Everybody ready?
Yes, sir.
All rise for the jurors, please.
Please be seated. Whenever you're ready.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Detective.
That you remain under oath.
Yes. And good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
We met, about a month and a half ago, December 29th, for a deposition in this case?
Yeah, I know we met. I don't know if it was that long ago or how my
time does move pretty quickly sometimes. Yeah. But so in any event, I'll just be asking you many of the same questions that I asked you then. And I just want to begin by asking you about the experience with Blue Star you had up to that day of January 1st, 2022, when you processed the Chrysler Sebring, or began, rather, the processing of the Chrysler Sebring. Up to that point, approximately how many times had you previously professionally used Blue Star for processing?
A rough approximation would be probably 15 to 20 times that I've used it.
And you used that experience in processing this particular item, correct?
That's correct.
That item being the Chrysler Sebring.
Yes.
It was already in the Manchester garage bay when you saw it, right?
Yes, it was.
Missing tires?
Yes.
And I believe you described them as guts, but a lot of car parts were actually inside.
That's correct.
The vehicle.
Yes.
So for using the Blue Star, one of the first things you have to do, obviously, is mix the chemicals, correct?
Yes.
And it is your practice, before doing so, to always reread the instruction manual.
Yes.
It never hurts just to make sure you're following it correctly, right?
That's correct.
And as you mentioned, there's the possibility that the instructions could have changed since the last time.
Yes.
So you implemented that same practice here. Before processing the Sebring, you reread the instructions.
Yes.
And I think you had also indicated that the instructions are fairly idiot-proof, I think you had said. But all the same, you made sure to comply with those instructions in the processing of the Sebring.
Yes, I did.
You applied, let me just back up. It took a while to process this car, right?
Yes, it did.
Two different dates?
Yes.
January 7th was one?
Yes.
The second date was the 7th?
Yes.
On the 1st, Detective Tucker assisted you?
Yes, he did.
For at least part of the time?
Yes.
And then on the second date, the 7th, Detective Lamy helped you, right?
That's correct.
And again, your goal with the Blue Star was to apply it to every nook and cranny of both the exterior and interior, correct?
Correct.
And before doing so, you obviously, you dimmed the lights in the bay.
In the bay, they're either on or they're off.
Okay.
There's no dimming feature to it.
But there was some light, maybe potentially, but it doesn't have to be pitch black for you to be able to see the Blue Star, correct?
We would use the flashlight that I had.
With the exterior, there were no positive reactions, right?
Correct.
A positive reaction, you've learned through your training experience, lasts about 30 to 60 seconds.
That's correct.
And it is that top blue color on that Kleenex box that's by the jury, right?
That's correct.
And you're able to distinguish that from what's called a false positive?
Correct.
Probably the same color, but it's more like a flash, right?
Yes.
It lasts for just a few short seconds.
That's correct.
There are a few things that can cause a false positive, one of those being a cleaning agent, right?
That's correct.
So sometimes in your investigations, a false positive can itself have some evidentiary value, right?
That's correct.
It may suggest that efforts were made to try and clean whatever object it was that you were processing.
That's correct.
Let's now talk about the application of the Blue Star to the interior of the vehicle. Before doing so, you placed down some butcher paper on the garage floor.
That's correct.
And you removed the items from the interior of the car.
That's correct.
And when I'm talking about the interior, there's the trunk, and that's been pretty well covered, but there's also the cabin.
That's correct.
The passenger cabin?
Yes.
The front seats and rear seats?
Yes.
So you removed any items, including car parts, from the interior before applying the Blue Star?
Yes, I did.
And you applied the Blue Star in the manner specified to you in the instruction manual?
Yes.
Again, it's not like a burst. It's a light spray that you're trying to provide, right?
That's correct.
You don't need to saturate it or anything?
Correct.
But you want to make sure that you apply that mist over the entirety of the vehicle?
That's correct.
And the interior?
Yes.
This would include the steering column?
Yes.
Center console?
Yes.
Driver's seat?
Yes.
All the seats, for that matter?
Yes.
And that's what you did?
Yes.
And there was no positive reaction?
That's correct.
No positive reaction on the steering column?
Correct.
Steering wheel?
Correct.
Driver's seat?
Correct.
The entirety of the passenger seat?
Correct.
Or the center console?
That's correct.
And that's what you documented in your report?
Yes.
A report which was later provided as discovery?
Yes.
And so just to be clear, this was the entirety of the interior that you applied the Blue Star?
Yes.
That would include not just the front passenger cabin, but the entirety of the rear passenger cabin?
Yes.
That would include all of the rear seats?
Yes.
Overruled. And that would include the entirety of the seat for the back passenger?
Yes.
And crevices?
Yes.
And again, there was no reaction?
Correct.
False or negative?
Correct.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Just a moment, please.
All right, you may step down.
Thank you.
I don't have a dog. Your Honor, the state calls Anthony Bagaro.
Please just watch the wire, sir.
And Mr. Bedaro, just remain standing.
Sure.
And raise your right hand.
Sure.
Do you swear that the testimony that you're about to provide this jury will be the truth and the whole truth under the pains and penalties of perjury?
Sir, yes, sir.
Have a seat and make yourself comfortable. There's some water in there.
Thank you.
How are you doing today, Mr. Bedaro?
All right.
Can you start by stating and spelling your full name for the record?
My name is Anthony Bodero, A-N-T-H-O-N-Y, B-O-D-E-R-O.
And sorry, we're just getting set up, Mr. Bedaro. I apologize.
It's okay. Take your time.
Just try to plug that back into
it. Sure.
that's fine.
I'm just going to step behind you for a minute there. Sure.
Mr. Bedaro, what's your date of birth?
August 30th of 1973.
And how far did you go in school?
High school. I mean, 11th grade.
11th grade. What's the current city that you reside in?
Manchester, New Hampshire.
And how long have you lived here in Manchester?
13, 14 years.
Mr. Bedaro, are you familiar with an area in Manchester called the Colonial Village Apartments?
Yes, sir.
And how are you familiar with that area?
I used to reside at the residence here. Okay.
And again, Mr. Bedaro, we're making a record, so I'm just going to ask, there's a little microphone in front of you. I'm just going to ask that you speak into that and as loud as you can.
I used to reside at Colonial Village.
How long did you live in Colonial Village for?
Lived there for like 4 months at one time and then like another 4 or 5 months after that.
And what were the periods that you lived there? What years?
I lived there from July of 2019 to, I would say, I think it was March of the following year. Yes, March of 2020.
Okay. And who did you live there with in that period that you just mentioned, the July 2019 to March 2020?
I live with a friend of mine.
And what's your friend's name?
Her name is Tanya Clement.
And what were the circumstances? What was the arrangement that you had with Tanya, that living situation?
We would share the bills for the rent of the apartment.
While you were living there during that period that we're discussing, so not the later time, but the July to March, did you own a vehicle?
Yes, sir.
And can you tell these jurors what kind of vehicle you owned?
I believe it was a 2004 Audi S4 in blue.
Would you recognize that vehicle if you saw it today?
Of course.
Yes, you may.
So, Mr. Bedaro, I'm showing you what's been marked for identification as States Exhibit 22.
Exactly.
Do you recognize that?
That's definitely my old car, yes.
And so you recognize it as your old car?
Yes.
I'm sorry, sir, I'm going to ask you, the big courtroom that everybody wants to hear you, so okay. Please keep your voice up.
Yes, that was my vehicle.
Okay. Is this a fair and accurate representation of your vehicle?
Yes.
Is this what your vehicle looked like, in other words?
Yes.
Your Honor, at this point I move to strike the ID and mark as full States Exhibit 22.
The objection?
May we approach?
Yes.
And Mr. Bedaro, you said you recognize this vehicle, that this is a fair and accurate
yes, sir.
Photograph of your vehicle.
Yes.
Is this what your vehicle looked like the last time you saw it?
Yes.
It is?
Yes.
Okay. Your Honor, at this point, I move to strike ID and mark as full States Exhibit 22.
No objection. All right, the ID is stricken. It's entered as a full exhibit.
And may I publish, Your Honor?
Yes, you may.
So, Mr. Bedaro, that exhibit that I just handed you, the photo of your car, I put it up on the screen behind you. Can you take a look at that for a moment? And can you tell these jurors what that image is of?
What the image is of?
Yes.
my vehicle.
And I think you said the last time you saw it, that's what the vehicle looked like?
Yeah.
What happened to your vehicle after you left the Colonial Village Apartments?
It was sitting for about 2 years at my in-laws.
Why was it sitting at your in-laws for 2 years?
I could not get it started.
Mr. Badero, at some point between when you left that vehicle for 2 years at your in-laws and today, did you consent to a search of that vehicle?
Yes.
And was that with the Manchester Police Department?
Yes.
Mr. Badero, I want to switch gears. Do you know someone named Adam Montgomery?
Yes.
And you can reposition yourself, that's fine. How do you know Mr. Montgomery?
I happened to meet him August of 2019.
Your Honor, may I approach?
Yes.
Mr. Badero, I'm showing you what's been admitted as State's Exhibit 101. Do you recognize the individual that's depicted in this photo?
Yes, sir.
And who do you recognize that to be?
As Adam Montgomery.
Your Honor, may I publish?
Yes, sir.
And Mr. Badero, is this the same Adam Montgomery that you...
That's funny.
That you met in August of 2019?
Yes, sir.
How often would you interact with Mr. Montgomery back in 2019?
I saw him maybe every few days or something like that.
How about Kayla Montgomery? Do you know someone named Kayla Montgomery?
Yes, sir.
And how do you know her?
I happened to meet her in 2013. Yes.
How did you meet the defendant in August of 2019?
I needed a ride to the Rockingham Courthouse to dispute a driving without a license ticket, and I needed a ride, so I happened to call a friend of mine, and he didn't have his car, so he said that he was with a friend of his and that he would ask him if he can give me a ride. He called me back, told me that the guy said okay. Then him and Adam Montgomery came to pick me up to take me to court. And when they arrived with three children, with Harmony and the two boys.
And you mentioned Harmony and two boys. Did you see those three children after that event?
Yes.
When did you last see Harmony?
The last time I saw Harmony was the second and last time I ever saw her, and that was about 3 weeks to a month later, after the August incident. I saw her with them where they resided at.
Mr. Badero, I want to switch gears with you again. Have you ever been convicted of a felony drug charge?
Yes, sir.
Were you in fact convicted of felony drug possession in 2014?
14. I think so, yes.
How about in 2016?
Yes.
How about in 2019?
No.
And Mr. Badero, did you provide testimony to the grand jury related to this case back in March of 2020? March 21st of 2022.
I believe, yes, sir.
And do you remember being asked in that grand jury proceeding whether or not you sold drugs to the defendant back in 2019?
Yes, sir.
Did you provide an honest answer to that question?
No, I did not.
During that grand jury testimony, were you given any type of immunity? Before you were asked that the questions
No.
about drugs. And after your testimony, after your grand jury testimony, did you agree to meet with with investigators regarding the case?
Yes, sir.
And was that in September of 2022?
Sounds about right.
At that point, had you been provided any type of immunity regarding drug activity?
No, I don't think so.
Do you recall agreeing to meet with those investigators, signing a written document?
I did agree to meet with them, yes, with an attorney.
Did you have an understanding about how your statements could be used, whether they could be used against you?
Yes.
What was your understanding of that?
That they would not use it against me as long as I told the truth.
And you mentioned having an attorney.
Yes.
Is that attorney here with you today?
Yes, sir.
And regarding your testimony here today, have you been provided immunity based on that drug information?
Yes, sir.
Before testifying today, you were provided immunity?
Yes, sir.
Based on that, Mr. Badero, I want to ask you questions about your sale of drugs back in 2019. Specifically, back in 2019, did you sell drugs to the defendant, Adam Montgomery?
Yes, sir.
Did you sell drugs to Kayla Montgomery?
Yes, sir.
How often would you sell the defendant and Kayla drugs?
Whenever I had any available.
How frequently was that?
Not frequent.
Were you actively selling drugs back then?
When I did have, yes.
And how would they pay you when they would purchase those drugs?
They would either pay me with cash or they would sell me food stamps.
Let's talk about that.
Yes, sir.
What do you mean when you say they would sell you food stamps?
Well, I would give them half of whatever they gave me in food stamps.
And let me back up. What type of drugs were they buying from you back then?
Heroin and crack.
Mr. Badero, did the defendant in this case, Adam Montgomery, did he ever sell drugs for you?
Negative, no.
Did you ever employ Mr. Montgomery to sell drugs for you?
No.
Did you ever hire him in any capacity?
No.
Mr. Badero, I want to turn your attention to Thanksgiving of 2019. Does that time frame stand out to you?
Yes, sir.
And can you tell these jurors why that stands out to you?
Because they approached me saying they had no place to live, and I let them stay in my vehicle.
And can you describe that arrangement where you let them stay in your vehicle?
Well, the reason I had them stay in the vehicle is because I was living with somebody else, that it was their apartment, and there was no room for them to be there. So the only choice I had was to let them stay in my vehicle.
And do you recall the specific, let me back up. How many days did they stay in your vehicle?
2 days.
2 days?
Yes, sir.
Do you recall the specific days?
No, it was just after Thanksgiving weekend.
And Mr. Badero, who stayed in your vehicle?
Adam, Kayla, and the two boys.
Earlier you mentioned Adam's third child, Harmony.
Yes.
Where was Harmony during that time where you let them stay in their vehicle, in your vehicle?
I do not know.
Was she with them?
No.
Did you see her at any point during that period where they were staying in your vehicle?
No, sir.
And do you recall how they came to be living in your vehicle? What was? Can you tell the jurors what that conversation was like?
Well, from what I recall, they gave me a call and told me they had no place to go. They came to where I was staying at. I let them upstairs. We talked, and I told them, I was like, I could let you stay in my car, but I can't let you stay here because this is not my apartment. That was the arrangement.
The car that you allowed them to stay in, was that the same car that I showed you an image of?
Yes, sir.
Moments ago? Yeah. Mr. Badero, back in late 2019, did you have a Facebook account?
Yes.
What was your Facebook name back then, if you can recall?
Anthony Tone Capone Bodero.
Anthony Tone, sorry?
Capone. Bodero.
Is that your full name, or?
No, that's just the street name.
Tone specifically, is that what you go by?
Well, they call me Tone Tony.
Were you friends with the defendant on Facebook, the defendant in this case?
Yes, I believe so, yes.
Do you recall what his Facebook name was back then?
I believe it was his name, Adam Montgomery.
How often would you communicate back then, late 2019, how often would you communicate with the defendant?
I don't remember, sir.
How would you communicate with him?
Telephone mostly.
Did you communicate with him on Facebook at any point?
I don't recall, but I wouldn't doubt it.
So I want to talk about those 2 days when they were staying in your car. The defendant, Kayla, and their two sons. Did you take them anywhere during those 2 days?
No.
Do you think that seeing your Facebook messages might refresh your recollection regarding whether or not you took them somewhere?
I guess.
Your Honor, may I approach?
Yes, you may.
More continuing coverage of the trial of Adam Montgomery for the murder of his daughter Harmony Montgomery is on the way. Press subscribe so you don't miss a moment from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
I'm Alistair Campbell from The Rest Is Politics.
Nish Kumar here from Podsafe the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Pod Save the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience, with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com, Upwork.com.
I'm Alistair Campbell from The Rest Is Politics.
Nish Kumar here from Podsafe the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Pod Save the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September. I'm Alistair Campbell from The Rest Is Politics.
Nish Kumar here from Podsafe the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Pod Save the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September. I'm Alistair Campbell from The Rest Is Politics.
Anish Kumar here from Pod Save the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Pod Save the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September. I'm Alistair Campbell from The Rest Is Politics.
Anish Kumar here from Pod Save the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Pod Save the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September. I'm Alistair Campbell from The Rest Is Politics.
Anish Kumar here from Pod Save the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Pod Save the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September. I'm Alistair Campbell from The Rest Is Politics.
Anish Kumar here from Pod Save the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Pod Save the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September.